Welcome to the podcast. We talk about all the things that are hidden in the shadows. This is Isaac, and on this bonus episode, I am joined by Lindsay Brisbane from The Chilling Podcast, a podcast detailing her most terrifying experience with the paranormal, and she's here to talk about it today. How are you doing, Lindsay?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good. Quick question off the bat. Now, I heard your podcast, heard of your podcast beforehand, but when you message us about coming on, I had to look into it more. But I'm curious, how did you hear about Hidden in the Shadows?
So I was just, you know, for me, I love connecting to other people who are into the paranormal. And I just Googled like popular, you know, paranormal podcasts, and you guys just popped up right away. And I was like, oh, cool. And then through other connections I had, you kind of got referenced like on my social media. So you kind of kept popping up. And I just thought, you know, I should reach out to these guys. I like that.
Well, it's nice to know that we are amongst the most popular ones. I would think that we were, you know, somewhere in the, you got to know.
Oh, really? Yeah. You came up when I Googled. There was like a list. You guys were on a recommended list. I think it was, I don't know the name of it, but it was like top 20 paranormal podcasts. And you were on one of the lists.
Well, that makes me feel nice. but the whole premise of your podcast started as almost like a, you know, a diary in a sense of going through your experience with probably something that most people either choose not to or either do not talk about. But you decided to make a whole podcast about it. And I guess without giving too much away from the podcast and Central, can you give me a brief overview for anyone listening right now?
Yeah. So, like you were saying, the podcast was kind of, in a way, yeah, like a diary. And I initially just thought, well, this really terrible thing happened to me. It happened to my roommates. And I just never could get over it. And I thought, well, what happens if I start researching? You know, maybe there's some answers for what happened. Maybe there are other people, you know. And so from there, it kind of snowballed into, I think I have a very long, interesting story here. And also, from what I've been told, one of the scariest hauntings anyone's ever heard of. So I decided to kind of put it all together and go through it all. And as far as the haunting itself goes, you know, I had had a lot of paranormal experiences in my life, and I have since then. But what was in this house and what I experienced, what my roommates and friends experienced, what others experienced, I've never been through anything scarier and, you know, anything more frightening. And at the end of the day, I think it's fair to say, after all my due diligence and research and talking with specialists, which I do in the podcast, it's fair to say, I think what was in the house was a demon.
Now, that was the interesting part, because everyone's experience from the podcast was generally seeing a girl before. And then your experience, I forget what episode it was, where it changed from the girl to an actual demon, how the demons are portrayed. By the way, one compliment I have to give you is that you probably have one of the best voices I've heard in podcasts out there right now.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I had to practice really hard, by the way, because I have a very heavy Midwestern accent, and I stutter sometimes when I talk, so... You know, when people are like, oh, how long did it take you? Like, sometimes reading my parts as the narrator, it could take me all day, like 4-6 hours of just reading and then editing it all, because I wanted it to sound as good as possible. And I have no training. So I was like, all right, here we go. Let's do it. So thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you need to look into doing audiobooks.
Thanks.
Yeah. But the way you told the story, and I would say the special effects, but the special sound effects that you used throughout the episode really gave someone listening a visualization of what was actually happening. And that was a powerful key, because then I could actually see what you were describing. And that strikes fear into anyone who would listen. And I guess that made a very intriguing part of your whole story.
Well, thank you. Yeah, when I was doing it, I thought, well, you know, because people, I've been asked to tell this story many times. I've been on several TV shows about the story. And even on those TV shows, nobody has ever properly portrayed what it was like. And I can't fault them for that. They didn't see it. They don't know. So I knew that I only had one sense to work with for my listeners, which is hearing. So I had to try to make it as to elicit as much of a feeling as I could. I wanted people to kind of, even just a little, feel what I felt. And so I had to rely, obviously, on sound to deliver that. And I just wanted to make it as real of an experience for people as humanly possible. So that hopefully as they listened and I'm describing and speaking and going through these things, they can put themselves in my shoes, even just a little.
Yeah. I guess the best part, amongst everything you talked about. But when you talked about previous experiences before this, what previous experiences do you have before this incident?
So, yeah, I talk about this a lot with people. So I grew up in a family that it was normal to have abilities and paranormal experiences. And I never knew that most people didn't, or that a majority of people didn't have paranormal experiences, because in my family, they were very common. So I was kind of raised that these things happen, it's normal, and just be aware of what's happening. Is it good? Is it bad? You know, try to distinguish and discern between the two. But I had all kinds of crazy experiences, even starting as a small child. And some were not super scary, and some were very scary. And, you know, I would just have these things happen where I'd hear something or see something, or have things in my own home happen that were really bizarre. You know, objects would disappear before my eyes, and I would get mad and say, whatever's in the house, give it back to me. And it would just reappear instantly. Like weird things like that. And I used to dream, I still do, not quite as much as I did in my early years, but I used to dream things before they would happen all the time. And I, whether it'd be a plane, you know, crash, or, you know, an illness in the family, I would have these premonitions constantly. And it was like super normal for me. And once when I was with my parents, even, I mean, we had so many things happen. There's just so many, but, me, my mom, and my dad actually all saw a demon together. Talk about a family bonding experience, but literally saw a demon together. So, I mean, I've been hearing and seeing spirits for a long time, and, you know, having the gift of just like premonition and things like that. And then obviously seeing demons. So lots of them.
So have you classified yourself as psychic, or did other people say you have psychic abilities?
I didn't realize. So I've started working on my second season, which is all interview based, talking with people. And it wasn't until I started working on that it clicked in my head. Oh my gosh, I might be a psychic. And I think I might be a medium. I don't know how to use these things. I think if I devoted myself to practicing it, I could really hone in on it. But, you know, it's a bizarre thing I have. It's strange when it happens, because sometimes people's dead relatives will visit me for them while they're there, which would be mediumship, which I didn't realize. And again, when you grow up in a family where we talk about it a lot, but we never, you know, talked about the difference between a psychic or a medium or what that means. It was just normal. Like visits from deceased loved ones and stuff growing up for me were common. So it just didn't seem strange. But as I've gotten older and I've been talking to people, I was like, oh, so like, I think I might be a psychic and a medium. I just don't know how to utilize it. It's almost like the universe just lets me tap in when something needs to happen, you know, and I would be interested to work with, you know, Patty Negri. She runs like a school that she teaches things, and I'm hopeful someday I can take some of her classes, but it would be interesting to see if I actually practiced or learned some techniques, what would happen. And, you know, I have weird things I can do. For example, you know, sometimes people try to test me with this and I go, well, I'm not that good. I'm not that tapped in yet, folks. But for example, my husband, I have this weird thing where if I'm laying in bed with somebody, I can tell if their eyes are open or closed. And it started early on in our relationship. And then he would go, are my eyes open or are my eyes closed? You know, and he'd make me cover my face with a pillow, like all kinds of stuff. And he'd go, how can you tell? I said, because I can see you. He goes, you can't. Your eyes are covered. And I go, I don't know how to explain it. I've done this since I was a kid. So then it turned into with my husband guessing numbers. And he'll have like a random number generator on his phone or something. And we were on a road trip one time. And it was only like numbers between like 1 and 20. We're not like going, you know, I'm not that great. It's not like I could, you know, give me between 1 and a million or something. And he would do it and I would get the numbers right every time. And recently I was just in my kitchen doing dishes and he just shouted out, give me a number. And I guess 7. And then he looked at me and he goes, how do you do that? And I explained it to people that with that sort of thing, I can see it. So it's like I can see my normal vision and then it appears. Like if I was looking at my computer right now, whether in the distance or over my computer, the shape will just kind of appear and I can see it, not super clearly, but not super fuzzy either. So weird things like that. But again, I never realized that's being psychic. I just thought, oh, well, I guess people just do that until I've started really talking to more people. And I went, oh, so that's being psychic. Okay.
That's actually more remote viewing. You're seeing outside yourself.
Okay.
You're very talented in the sense that you can see outside yourself, but a room. Now, the full, I guess, if you were to practice it and get stronger with it, my wife does it all the time. It's kind of her main strong gift amongst many different things she does. I call it like the jack of all trades when it comes to psychic abilities. It seems to be nothing she can't do.
That's
but
cool.
She's stronger with remote viewing than any other ability she has because she can go anywhere to anyone at any time, whether alive or dead.
Wow.
Find anyone she wants. It's also how we field, I guess, fake people essentially that ask for our help and services with our paranormal team. So she can go to their house, check if it actually is haunted, come back and tell me exactly where everything is so we can deal with it there. But that skill, what you're doing is essentially remote viewing. And the stronger you get with it, the further you can go with it. So you don't have to be in another room. You could be across the country, across the world on a phone call and tell the person exactly what they're wearing, where they are. And if you get stronger with it, you can even channel them and feel their emotions and stuff like that, which empathic work, did you ever feel any strong connection to that? Like feeling other people's emotions?
Yeah, weirdly enough that you're asking. I'm like a human lie detector, I guess you would say too. I can feel. Like I don't know how I've tried to describe this to people, but I can actually feel someone's energy. So they can be disguising it well, by the way. And I'll be like, they're angry or they're sad or they're not feeling well or they have a headache. Like I can say, that's the other weird thing I can do sometimes too, is I can actually physically feel other people's ailments from time to time. And then I'll be like, and you know, I'll get a really bad headache or something and they'll be like, oh, my head. And I'll be like, okay, that's where that came from. So yeah, definitely I have that for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, I would dive deep more into that. You seem to have some untapped skills that aren't being put to good use.
Yeah, I should look into it. You know, like in other things, like when I was a kid that I could do that I didn't find out till later is like one thing, I guess they tell psychic people to do to help train themselves. But I did it all the time as a kid, thought it was normal. Way back in the day, growing up, I had a rotary phone. Anyone who doesn't know what that is, you've seen it in movies where you stick your finger in the circle and dial the numbers. We didn't have caller ID or anything when I was growing up. And I always knew who was calling. So I would answer the phone and say, hey, Auntie Lenny. And my aunt would go, how do you know it's me? I said, I saw your face before I picked up the phone. And she would go, what? And I'd go, I saw it was you. It's what? You know, and I would do that with people all the time. And I could do the same thing if it was like a spam caller or a stranger. And I would just let the phone ring because I'd be like, oh, that's just like not someone I know. So I'm not going to answer the phone. I can just go to the answering machine. So, and it wasn't until I got a little bit older and my family would be like, how do you do that? And I explained it and they were just like, it's not normal, kid, but I mean, cool. And I was like, thanks, guys. But yeah, and I did that as a child all the time.
Like I said, amazing gifts you need to master and get better with because I guarantee you'll be one of the talented ones out there.
Well, I should really look into. I've never really looked into a whole, like what to do to strengthen them. So I should find some things and just do them as like daily practice and see how much more I can kick it off to see where it goes for sure. That would be cool.
But a fair warning, I give to anyone that goes deeper within the paranormal. And you felt this firsthand because I remember listening to the epilogue episode recently, and you talked about just talking about this podcast puts you under attack, putting this information out there in the world for everybody to hear. A warning I always give to anyone is that the more you dive deep into the paranormal, the more you grow your psychic abilities, or at least your interest and research deeper into it, the light that's essentially with anyone gets brighter and brighter and brighter, and it also attracts everything around you. So you think you're just dealing with this one entity that you're dealing with right now. Imagine dealing with anything in the area, because now they can see you. So I'll leave you the warning I get to people. If you're going to go into this, if you're going to go farther down the rabbit hole, you better have some protection with you before you decide to go.
All right. I'll look into it because, because I do pick things up. That's the other problem I've had happen several times. I brought things home. I've been at a cemetery or at a place. And I'm kind of in the habit now, if I go somewhere and I can sense that there's an entity, I'll just say, like, you know, you can't come with me. You know, I can sense you're here. Not that they are always bad or anything. It's just like, you can't come because I don't know what to do with you. And one time I actually had to drive one, quote unquote, home because it had hitched a ride and I knew it was in my house and I knew that where it came from. And I said, get in the car. I literally went out and I said, you're in here, come out to my car. And I drove them back to where they came from and then opened my car door and said, please get out. You know, I'm not trying to be rude or anything, and I understand why you came with me, but I can't have you haunting my house. I already have two ghosts in my house. I can't have a third, you know?
I understand. Our house is consistently bombarded so much that Megan, my wife, who's not, like I said, she is the psychic of our team, but she's also the white witch. So she puts protection spells around our house to prevent the onslaught of consistency that we seem to deal with all the time. But then again, we go out picking fights. So that's just us. Now, getting back to your story, like I said, before we were talking, we would go off on tangents, and it's no big deal.
I love tangents. They're great. It's fun.
Now, this whole place took place in Kent, Ohio?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Kent, Ohio.
I don't know what's with that state, but it seems to be a lot of spookiness coming out of it. I actually have friends. I don't know if you've heard of Believe in the Bizarre podcast.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Buddies of ours. They started around the same time as us, and we kind of just kept in touch. We call them our sister podcasts or something like that. But they're out of Ohio themselves. And another favorite of mine, who I call the best paranormal podcast out there, is Belief Hole.
Oh, I've never heard of that one. I'll have to look into that.
In my opinion, the best paranormal podcast out there in the world. But they're out of Ohio as well. So I'm like saying two of the best out there right now from the same state. Yeah.
That's cool. I'll write them down.
Kent, Ohio doesn't seem a place that would have something this essentially dark. Mm-hmm. How you describe it in your podcast, stuff like that, it doesn't seem that it would be just there naturally. And most of these things, is dealing with demons as I have before, never naturally come to a place. So always seem to be called. And one of the things you talked about in the podcast was the symbols that were in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you never gave a major description of what they looked like. You always said they looked witchcrafty, or, you know, like devil worship or something like that. But now, after researching and doing all you have, do you have an idea exactly what those symbols were?
Yeah, so minor spoiler alert for listeners who listen to my podcast, but a recent resident spoke with me about what he remembered seeing. Now, my memories of it were vague, but I remembered it enough to know what it looked like. And my roommates did too. So we all had this like vague impression of what it was, but not, I mean, it had been almost 20 years. So I had a resident who lived there just over a year and a half ago describe his memory of it to me. And with that, I went looking. And then I reached out to demonologist Michael Salerno, and I gave him what this guy, recent resident with my memories, gave to see what he would come up with. And we both came back with the same thing, which would be a very rudimentary version. And I probably will say this wrong, but it's the sigil of Bathmet, I believe it is, or Bathmet or something. It's basically from the Church of Satan.
Interesting. I know you spoke to a demonologist on the episode, one of the guys you interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been studying demonology myself. And what I know about Baphomet technically is not a demon. It was a made-up entity for the Templars, at least the ones that chose not to worship Christ and stuff like that. They created an entity itself that represented that. Now, does it have all the aspects of demonology and Satanism and stuff like that? Yeah, it's almost carbon copy, but Baphomet, the entity itself, doesn't actually exist. And that's, I think, is why the atheistic satanic church uses its symbol versus, say, an actual demon from demonology. But that's interesting that they would use that symbol and it called something as powerful as what you experienced there. And that's what I was, now that I'm thinking about it, that's it's almost like it came mocking what whoever did that. And most of the time, someone did that, they either did that for power or connections or spells, or at least to get information from, well, from my experience, is that it seems that they were calling it there, not intentionally, unless the people doing what they did had no idea what they were doing. They were just doing something and they were trying to get aroused out of whatever was there. Did they ever get not a carbon date, but did they ever figure out like how old the symbols were or how long ago they were put there?
Well, I know. So what's interesting is, so with the symbol itself, it wasn't a carbon copy. So it was a circle, but it didn't necessarily have a pentagram or a goat in the center, which you would see with the sigil of Baphomet more often than not. It's the closest thing I could equate it to, but it was a circle. It had weird shapes in the center, not quite a pentagram by any means. And then around the edges of the circle were a bunch of different kind of shapes and things as well. And what it looked like, which was so strange to me, is, you know, whether you see it in a movie or whether it's somebody who loves heavy metal, like typically when someone draws a pentagram or something satanic or something of that nature, it's a very stylized, specific looking thing. And this, what's in this basement looks like something that you would see in like the Blair Witch movie. Like it is super creepy. It looks, and this is the other thing that really weirded me out about it. Again, it looked like it had been there for 1,000 years. Like it looked almost like caveman-esque. Like it didn't have a modern spray paint or paint or truck. It looked like an ancient symbol. And if everyone who's ever looked at it, I have talked to so many people who've seen this thing, everyone felt uncomfortable. Not even like, oh, that's spooky, like physically uncomfortable. There are those who had seen it and literally put a lock on that basement door and would never go down again. And not because, oh, that's weird in a basement. It made people feel unwell to just look at it. So it's really hard, but the closest thing I could come up with would be that symbol. But again, it's not quite that because it didn't have a distinct pentagram or star in the center. It didn't have a goat or a satanistic looking type thing. But it had the circular shape. It had these lines around the outside and kind of lines going through it. It was really weird looking. As for how long it was there, that I don't know, but what I do know is that in the 80s, the house was a frat house, and I did get to have a conversation with a man who lived in that house at the time, and he openly said that they did incredibly, like, hardcore phasing in the basement of that house. And I would imagine that either they put the symbol there, or it had been there before that, maybe. But to also know that, you know, really intense hazing had been going on in that basement, which is a very dark, weird basement. I don't know. That's very strange to me as well.
Yeah. And I have my own theories about it from listening and from my experience, stuff like that. And usually with that kind of incantation, things are called to that place, and either they're called for specific reasons or just called just to be called. And sometimes someone answers. And sometimes when they answer, it's not always a good person. Kind of like a Ouija board, things like that. Like Ouija boards, you're trying to connect to the spiritual realm, but what you're doing is sending out a megaphone of anybody out there. And of course, you know, not everyone who shows up is going to be nice. But when you do that specific kind of call, it's for a specific kind of entity. And I if you say it with a frat house and then the extreme hazing, I guarantee they did it as a scare tactic.
Yeah.
And it just called something there that they didn't intend to do. And now it's the house is housing essentially one of the most darkest things in existence out there.
And that was, and not to cut you off, but that was kind of one of my theories with my show, was that, which is why I brought it up later on, is because I just thought, well, if they were down there doing that, and they did put that on the wall, that, to your point, could have called something into the house, for sure. Because that's as far back as I could find any residents willing to talk to me, and they were experiencing activity even in the 80s, so...
I forgot the name of your friend who was sleeping in the downstairs room that was next to the basement.
That would be Amber.
Amber. How you described your experience, it sounded to me like oppression, an oppression case, at least a demonic entity that is trying to break the will of one individual person to make them ready for possession. That's what it sounded like for you. But how you described Amber's situation, how she seemed closed off to everyone, also sounded like oppression. It's like you guys are going through the same situation, except your experience was you shared it, and then Amber seemed to be very close off to everyone, not really sharing any of her experiences. Did she talk about it later, like saying how she had almost the same experience as you, or maybe her experience was entirely different?
So I think who you're thinking of is Rebecca. Are you talking about the roommate that was like really closed off and didn't come out of her room? Because Amber had issues too. So everybody ended up having issues. Amber ended up becoming really emotionally depressed. I talk about how Amber could walk in the house. And when I say mad, like it for no reason, she'd walk in the back door. I'll never forget the sound of her feet hitting the back wooden stairs. She would walk up, boom, boom, boom. She'd slide open the door, slam it shut, and kind of glare at you like, what are you doing here? Like sitting in the living room. And she'd go into her bedroom and slam the door as hard as she could. And I'd be like, oh, okay. 5 minutes later, Amber would come out of her room smiling. Hey, how's your day going? And I would be like, what? And at some point I brought it up to her. Like, do you remember what you just did? Like 10 minutes ago, 5 minutes ago? And she's like, what are you talking about? I just came in the house. I go, you don't remember the way you were acting. And she's like, and then she'd be like, I don't remember anything, actually, now that you're bringing it up. And she was the one who had the basement door in her room. The roommate who lived below my room at the front of the house, at the base of the stairs, she was the roommate who went in her room and never came out. And we thought that maybe she had died, she had committed suicide. I mean, we didn't know what was going on. She never came out. She didn't come out to use the bathroom. She didn't come out to eat. She didn't ever come out of her room. We didn't speak for close to a decade. And then she, after that, agreed to come on the podcast, and we talked about everything. And to the point you're making, you know, she explained how she would hear me, and she's like, I know your voice. Like, I know you, the sound of your voice, the sound of your, the way you laugh, everything. We've known each other since high school. So, and she would hear me outside her door, like, whispering and laughing and like doing weird stuff to her door. Sometimes she'd see feet, you know, and she would swing open her bedroom door and I wouldn't be there. Or there would be times that would happen and I wouldn't even be home. And yet, even though she knew that I hadn't been outside the door, even though she knew that I, you know, hadn't even been home, in her mind, she still somehow thought it was me. And was so angry at me. And she said, looking back now, all these years away from the house, she's like, clearly whatever was in the house was doing that to my mind. Because it's illogical to think that you're standing outside my door, I don't know, tormenting me, when you're not even in the house. She goes, a logical person would conclude something else is happening. But at the time, she was like, it just made her madder and madder at me, almost like, how is Lindsay doing this to me? You know, kind of thing. So she admitted that whatever was in the house was definitely manipulating her mind.
That's right. Not Amber, your friend Rebecca.
There's a lot of friends that come and go in that house, so don't.
I got it mixed up. I thought because Amber was the one closest to the basement, so she meant she was closest to the entryway that the demon came out of. So that's what I thought she was getting. But from how you sounded, like all three of you were being oppressed. Well, anyone in the house, it was like it was seeing who would break first. It almost like seemed like that. Like it was trying to chip away at Ichi and seeing who would break first. And then whoever did would be the one that it possessed.
And I think I didn't realize it. So to the point you're making, this is one of the scariest moments for me making the podcast. I mean, I've had quite a few, but when I spoke to the demonologist, he went through the stages of, you know, possession. And I heard it in movies and stuff. I mean, I know it, but it's different when you're talking about to someone who's an expert, you know, about yourself. And he goes, you do realize you were like one stage away from possession. And I had never, oh, it always gives me the chills to say that. And I had never considered that before. And then I remembered, and I talk about it in the podcast, what I would call being jumped, where I could feel myself almost, if you want to call it your spirit, your energy, whatever it is, you know, whatever you believe in, being kind of pushed back in something else taking the wheel. And it wouldn't last for long, but it wasn't me. And I could see what was kind of going on, but almost from like a back view, like I was far away. And I would kind of come back into myself and be like, what the heck just happened? And I would not remember what I talked about. And much like I talked about Amber coming in the house, slamming and being angry, or Amber would have fits of rage sometime, which was not like her. And she wouldn't remember what she said or did. And it was a similar thing. And when the demonologist explained, well, that was like, you were heading into being possessed. And I remembered those moments and thought, oh my gosh, she's right. There was something happening there going into me that I could feel that I'd have to kind of push it back out to get myself kind of behind the wheel again, if you will.
I dealt with a few oppression cases, well, four now, and how each of them were described almost reminded me of your story as well. So hearing it, I was like, ugh. I knew it was like, okay, she's not. She didn't get possessed. She's fine because she's telling the story. I'm hearing her voice. Yeah. But hearing your experience up to that point was like, yeah. And then I was, I don't know, at the end, I guess, let's not talk about the end because I don't want to give anything away.
Well, you could talk, if you want to talk about something, you can. It doesn't bother me. Sorry, if you have questions.
Well, I can end this out if you want me to. It didn't have a happy ending.
Mm-mm.
No, it just kind of like, you left it all behind. Being away from the house, being out of the house all together, kind of left everything behind. And you telling that small part about how you went back because you guys on a business trip in the area and just being outside of the house, I actually going in it literally gave you like a panic attack.
Mm-hmm.
Just from like the emotional trauma that you went through the entire time you were there. Like I remember hearing the recording that you were crying and you couldn't, it was like beyond just traumatizing just to be outside the house.
Yeah. And what's crazy is, you know, as soon as my foot hit would be the property of that house, I just got this overwhelming emotional, like, oh, like, and I couldn't stop crying and I was shaking. But what really bothered me the most is when I looked, no one was home and I had knocked and I looked in the windows. And as soon as I looked in, I knew it was still there. And I knew, like, I could feel it. Looking back, like, oh, pop by to say hi, did you? Like, it, I could feel it looking back from inside at me, like, wow, you're here, huh? Want to come in? Like, it was the worst, like, because I thought, well, maybe I'll go back and I won't feel anything, or maybe I'll be a little emotional, but I won't sense it. And it is still there. I absolutely sensed it.
Is everyone currently living there now?
Yes, there is. I don't know who the current residents are. Amber, funny enough, just recently drove by the house and sent me a photo with, and you could see the lights were on. And weirdly, they had like blankets up over all the windows, but you could see that they were illuminated. It wasn't even curtains. It was like blankets. But I did speak to, in the show, the person who lived there just over, a year and a half ago. And they were still having activity. So, you know, whoever's there now, I just hope and pray that, you know, they're not going through anything.
Yeah, I think you said mentioned this, but the landlords of the house, they don't care about the turnover.
You know, weirdly enough, and here's what. So one of the individuals I spoke to, his name was Tom. He didn't want to come on. Unfortunately, he's battling cancer and he's really not doing very, very well. He grew up basically as a child to a teenager in the house. And we got to talking. It took him a long time to get like we were really, you know, I was seeing, is he real? Is he not? And I eventually did all my little PI work and realized, yeah, he lived in the house. I confirmed it all without his knowing. And I think he wanted to know why I was telling this story. I think part of him was thinking, well, if she's just doing this for, like, I don't know, fame and fortune or something, like, screw that, because what happened to me was so bad, I don't want to partake. And when he realized that my goal was kind of like what not to do in a haunted house, or how to survive living with a demon, or if you're in this situation, you're not alone. When he realized it was something much bigger than just a flimsy, just give me your info, we really started communicating a lot. And, you know, I put in the podcast a majority of what he wrote down for me. I had him just write it all out. And he said, okay, I'm not the best at writing. I said, I will have my brother-in-law read it for you exactly how you write it. I said, I'm not going to change a thing. So you just send it. And he did. But in between that, we spoke a lot. And one of the things he flat out told me, his family had the same landlords I did. They told them that it was haunted. They flat out knew. And I never knew that. And he said that what had happened was he was experiencing a lot of weird stuff. Poor guy. His family was convinced something was mentally wrong. They took him to a doctor. He was put on schizophrenia medication as a teen or a child, which that's not very common, because they said the things he was saying were unbelievable that was happening in this house. And his parents at some point brought it up to neighbors, our son saying this, that, and the other. And the neighbors right nearby were like, well, that's because your house is haunted. And his parents were like, what? You know, we've put our kid on meds. What do you mean our house is haunted? And they were like, no, nobody talks about it, but everybody knows that house is haunted. So then when they spoke to the landlord, this is what he told me. His parents said, the neighbors around here say the house is haunted. And they basically said, yeah, what do you want us to do about it? What do you want us to do? So, yeah, I guess they don't care about the turnover, because they certainly didn't care that it was haunted, you know?
Well, obviously, they're not greedy as you would think they are for not getting rid of it, but they're not as greedy as you think they are because they leave it there. If they were as just caring about money as you suspect them to be, they would turn it into a haunted house and charge people to investigate or at least visit the house. But because that probably would gain you more revenue than just renting out to people and losing that resident within a year or time. So it's like, I don't think they 100% believe. I think they're just like, whatever, you know, there's nothing we can do, you know. We're not going to hire people to come in and remove anything. So just, you know, deal with it, whatever. So
That's exactly my feeling. My takeaway was that from what Tom said, his family heard from the neighbors and their interaction with the landlords was basically like, they were just like, yeah, what do you want us, like, what do you, okay. Like, you know, and back then what people maybe not always keeping in mind when he was in the house and stuff, like there weren't, there were resources for help, but to your point, if you don't really believe in this stuff anyways, and I don't think that they necessarily did, but I also don't think that they did not. I think that they knew something was wrong in there. Just what it was, who knows? You're not going to go spend your time trying to find, I don't know, priests or, you know, investigators or whatever. And if people don't make a big fuss about it, and that was the other point, is that, you know, we never said anything to the landlords. You know, I'm almost being possessed by a demon, and I never once picked up the phone and said, hey, there's a demon in your house, you know. But at the same time, other things happened that I didn't put in the show, but they went from being the most, when we first met them and their tour of the house, which is so strange, I go over it in the show, but they went from being the most curious and friendly and wanting to get to know us landlords ever. And as soon as we moved in, we could not get a hold of them. Like, they would not return our calls if we hadn't, like, we never heard from them. And, you know, I was like, what has happened? They went from always being so, like, needing to know everything about us to suddenly, we can't get a hold of these guys. Like, and it was almost this sense of, we just don't want to hear it. You're on your own. Good luck. And at one point in the basement, and this is after Reba moved out, all of a sudden we're like in the living room, Amber, Adam, and I, and we hear this rushing of water. And we cannot figure out. It's so loud. It is so loud. And we are like searching through the house. It sounds like, you know, in the movie Jumanji, when like the water comes in the building, like it was so loud. And we're like, the house must be flooding, but where? we open the door to the basement, and the basement is filled with water, just shooting out of a wall. We could not get a hold of the landlords. Like, we had to call and call and call and call, and we could not get a hold of them. And finally, they called us back. And what was weird, they kind of like accused us. They're like, well, what did you do? And we were like, what did we do? We didn't do anything. But you got to get over here. Like, there's something going on in your basement. This is serious. And they're like, you will pay for this. I'll never forget it. They were like, you clearly did something and you will pay. They were the meanest. Like, and we had never been able to talk to them before. They didn't even come. They sent someone else. They wouldn't come to the house at all. They would, and I would assume if I'm a landlord and somebody calls and says your basement's flooding and there's water shooting out of a wall at a rapid amount of water here, I would want to go see it with my own eyes. And they would, neither one of them would come. They sent somebody else. And then the guy had to go down there and said, oh, like, this is really weird. I've never seen this. The whole thing severed. Like, almost like someone took a saw to it. Like, he's like, but it's on the city side, so the city will have to come and fix this, and you guys don't have to pay anything, or the owners of the house don't. But the guy was like baffled. Like, he could not figure out how it happened. He was like, this makes no sense. Clearly, I don't understand this. And I didn't put that in the book. But, and again, the landlords never came. They were just like, nope, we won't come to the house.
And a conspiracy theorist would say, they're in on it. They're in on it.
I think that they knew something was up. And I just think it was easier to just look away and just not come and not hear it, you know, because I'm sure if one household of residents told them, the parents of Tom, your house is haunted, and they were like, yeah, what do you want me to do? I'm assuming maybe they heard it from others. You know, if I probably would have interacted with them more, I probably would have been like, you know, if they would have come over during the water incident, I would have been like, well, that was clearly the work of the demon. And they would be like, what? I'd be like, well, there's a demon in the house. And clearly it likes to mess with people. And the guy from the city and the whatever he is, he's saying no one knows how it happened because it doesn't make any sense. And I'm going to tell you it's a demon. So I think that there was part of them that whatever may or may not have been going on, they just probably just didn't want to deal with it.
Most likely. I call those slumlords. But a question I like to ask most podcasters, and I know you're new to the podcasting world because this is like your first thing ever you did with paranormal podcasts particularly. Seems to be two kinds of paranormal podcasters that I have encountered in all the interviews I've done and being on other ones as well and listening because I'm an avid listener of podcasts. It seems to be spectators and players in the game. By meaning spectators, essentially people who like to observe the paranormal from a distance, talk about it, give their opinions and stories, but they don't go looking for it. They don't go investigate, or they don't, you know, deep in research, or like they participate in anything paranormal wise. You just kind of view from the outside, on the sidelines, you would say. And there's players in the game who are like avid paranormal investigators on the side of their podcast. They do deep research. They're consistently like participating in anything paranormal to gain more knowledge. And I know from your experience, most people say, yeah, she would have to be a spectator. She just went through the most horrible kind of game possible. Get out of it. And you'd stay on the sideline. You don't want to be a part of it. But would you consider yourself now, or at least what you're planning to be, a player in a game? Or do you wish to be a spectator, which no one would blame you if you wanted to?
You know, I would say that I'm a player in the game because, again, my lifetime of experiences, even if I didn't want these things, like even if I was like, I'm going to tell, like, this is my story and that's the end, these things happen to me all the time. So I am so immersed, even if I didn't want to have paranormal encounters, they're just part of my life, or psychic things, you know, I they're just there. And so what I would say is I've always been interested in paranormal investigating. I've never done it on my own because, truthfully, whenever I go to a haunted location, it is like, if there's a ghost, it's coming. Like, there's no questions asked. If there's an entity in the house and I am there, it's going to make contact. And I've never done it. You know, I've never been an aggravator. Like, you know, I've never been the kind of person to come in and be like, come on, show me, you know, like, or, you know, picking a fight with ghosts. But I would love to actually go ghost hunting. I would love to go with people that know what they're doing. and are smart and scientific and respectful and get to the bottom of things. And I think it would be fun, especially because with me there, I'm kind of like, you know, like a bug light to a bug. Like if you put me in the room, it's coming. So it's like, I always think I'd love to go. And my dream goal to that point, which, you know, probably will never happen, but what I'd really like to do is I'd like to go back to the house. I would like to go back. I know that Adam would go back with me, my husband. I know Amber would. Lane would probably go. Laura, who's in the show, already said, I'm down. Take me. I want to go. I would love to go back to this house. I'd like to bring a team of investigators and scientists because I know that the evidence that would get captured would be mind-blowing. And if we put us all back in the stew, in the cauldron, and got to stay there for like a night, I'm talking weeks, what would happen in that house would be probably some scientific breakthroughs. I really think so. So I definitely would consider myself a player in the game. I'm a rookie in terms of the investigating or doing stuff. I've never really done that myself or on my own. Certainly in my youth, we would kind of kick that around a little bit. But I actually just had a friend reach out to me. I live in Austin, Texas now. They're doing these ghost tours. And she said, would you go with me? And I was like, absolutely. So I was like, let's do it. So I think we'll go do that and that'll be cool.
I believe, I'm not 100% sure, but I think my wife has told me before, because I'm originally from Texas myself. I live in North Carolina now, originally from San Antonio, Texas. But I remember visiting Austin often to play shows because I was in several different bands at the time. But I believe we know a paranormal team in San Antonio. If that's true, I can give them your connects and see if you guys can meet up.
That would be really cool because, again, I think for me, I'm always the kind of person, if someone knows more than I do, I'd rather learn from those who have experience than to just, you know, act like I know and I don't know. I know what I've seen on TV and I read a lot. I know a lot about the paranormal world and a lot of concepts and things. It's just when it comes to investigating, I've never done it. But I also don't have fear anymore. It's interesting because people are always just like in my family, they're like, you would go back and stay in that house? I'm like, absolutely. Because the thing I know now that I didn't know then was I had been going through a lot and I was an easy target for the entity, the demon in the house. Whereas now I know it's there and I know it would be happy to mess with me. But I also know how to protect myself. Whereas before, I don't think I did very well. So I have a lot less fear. So a lot of my family's like, you would go ghost hunting? I'm like, sure, if I went with the right people. But because I don't really have fear. I mean, when you've lived with a demon for a year, there's not a whole lot that's going to top that for you. So I don't really have that much fear of these things. And also I've had so many encounters with spirits. So it doesn't really scare me like it does other people.
How's the activity at your home now?
It's actually been okay lately. Like probably the last, that's not true. Never mind. I had something that happened the other night. I was laying in bed and I could hear something tapping on the wall, but it wasn't from a neighbor's. It was in my room and it was kind of above my head and then like slowly worked its way down the wall towards me and then just kind of stopped. And I was like, and then I laid there for a second and I was just like, okay, like something's here. If you're, you know, going to do something, do it. If not, I'm going to go to sleep. I'm tired. And I did. And, you know, we've had all kinds of things happening, you know, that was the only thing recently. But prior to that, you know, my poor husband, I always apologize to him. He was sitting in our room and I was in the other room and all of a sudden he starts shouting and he's like, what are you doing? But he sounded kind of scared because he was just like, what are you doing? And I'm like, what? I'm like working on my computer. What do you want? And he goes, no, I mean, what are you doing? And I'm like, I am on the couch. And then he was like, you weren't just peeking around the door and then stood in the doorway staring at me and then like ran off. And I'm like, no. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And I guess he said he saw something like peeking around the door frame and like pull its head back and kind of did it again. And then when he saw it, it kind of just stood there in the door frame. And then it kind of like slinked off and then moved away. And he was just like, what? So we have things like that happening quite a bit. And it just comes and it goes. Sometimes I think it's related to the podcast. Sometimes I think I just pick things up or we pick things up. So yeah, there's usually things happening. The door thing, thankfully, hasn't been going on anymore since I finished the first season. that door that would open all the time, which was so scary. It doesn't do that anymore. So I'm grateful for that because that was kind of creepy.
Not say much. I think I've seen everything you can see and things that people probably have never seen when it comes to the paranormal. But the average thing is hearing footsteps in the doorway, seeing people peek around the corners, being grabbed from underneath the bed, hearing my name clearly whispered behind my left ear, seeing shadow figures dance kind of like Pennywise in the It movie off in the distance. Yeah, I had my fair share.
And when you've seen, experienced things like that, you know, like I said, you kind of like your bar starts to get set higher and higher. So like even for us, like it really has to be something to really make me go, whoa. And one thing that happened when I was making the podcast, oh my gosh, this was so freaky. I was editing and I was working on a section about the demon. And suddenly my computer goes, I hear this sound first off. I hear this, which wasn't like one of my sound effects. But at first it like came in and I'm like, I don't remember putting that in this part. And it was like this low growling kind of sound. And I was like, I don't remember putting that in this time thing. And as soon as I noticed that I heard it, the volume on my computer went full blast. My ears like felt like they were going to explode, my eardrums. I threw off my headset. You could hear it on my headset blaring. And on my headset, when it was off my head, you could hear kind of this like sound. And I was like, dear God, because I was editing the part about a demon. I was like, oh God. So then I was like, I paused it and I like looked at the volume, like nothing was up. And I was like, okay, like if this is some sort of glitch in the system, before I put my headphones on, I'm going to press play so that I can figure out how to turn the volume down. And when I pressed play, the volume was normal and I couldn't find that growling sound at any point in there. Like stuff like that would happen all the time when I was editing. It was so freaky.
Probably didn't catch any EVPs. In the early days of our Hidden the Shadows podcast, we would catch EVPs all the time with our mics that we use right here. And granted, they're not super special. I'm an SM57, SM58, so it's nothing like, you know, high quality, like, you know, very sensitive microphones, something like that. But we noticed in the early stages of our podcast that people told us, hey, you have other people in the room or there's just this weird spirits talking and stuff like that. And we would catch them all the time. And from your situation, how you were describing your house, I'm surprised you didn't catch any, maybe not this season, maybe second season when you start recording. You might actually start picking up EVPs while you're talking and recording, doing interviews.
Well, what's weird is when I saw all the narrations I did that took me, you know, 4 hours, 6 hours, however long it was for each episode to do, there were times I didn't, because of my fear of what this thing is, I was just, but there were a few. I don't know if I would classify them necessarily as EV. It was hard to say for sure. And one of them I did kind of try to listen to and I went, okay, I'm good on that. But I would be reading off my narrations and every now and then I would catch something and it was very similar to that growling I heard. And in one particular one, it would be weird because it would almost sound like my equipment was malfunctioning. So, and that's how I would hear it while I'm, you know, going through all this editing, trying to pick the parts I want to use that sound the best. And I would suddenly hear almost like this, like, staticky, like malfunctioning kind of sound. And I would hear it and be like, what the heck is that? And every once in a while within that, I would hear kind of a like weird. And I would be like, what is that? And one of them in particular, definitely it was kind of sounded like a growl. I didn't save it or anything. I was just like, yeah, I don't need that. But I definitely found a few of those. And again, it was very similar to what happened when I was actually editing the show and like doing the final pass on it when that thing like did that sound in my headphones. And that was the only ones I picked up. There was maybe probably like five questionable ones, like maybe two like, okay. And then that one that I was like, okay, that's something growling and we're just going to move on.
And that's what I liked about the structure of podcasts is that it's unlike anything I've heard before. It's like I said, the production, your voice, everything, how you did it was just, it was great. And granted, you said an epilogue, it took you almost 3 years to get everything exactly. Then again, you never knew in this, you had to learn all everything that you did on your own, all the editing, all the sound effects, everything was all done by you. which it would sound like someone who's been in the game for at least, you know, 5 or 6 years from the talent and stuff like that. So when I was listening to it, you said that, I was like, what? Okay, geez. Yeah, this is what you need to be doing. If you're this good already without even having any prior experience, yeah, this is pretty impressive stuff. But the first season was all basically you just telling your story from beginning to end and throwing in minor details in the after. But next season, the one you're planning now, is all listener submission and interview based, right?
Yeah. So, you know, when you're the person, like I always say, when you're the one who's got the craziest story that most people have heard in terms of a haunting, like in their life, they're just like, that's Lindsay's the one with the story. Everyone comes to you with their stories. You know, all my life, I've had people come to me with their stories. So, you know, some of them, like I'm going to have my mom on there. My mom has some of the craziest stories you'll ever hear. My baby sister, my cousin, Dana. And then I'm going to have people who are, you know, experts in the paranormal field or listeners. You know, I'm doing more, giving other people a chance to just have a conversation, kind of like we're doing right now, and sharing their stories. And some of them are really funny. Some of them are really spooky. Some are just people's like life stories in the paranormal world, you know. And so that's really going to be an interesting, you know, way to go. And I would love to do, you know, down the road, another season like season one. I would just have to find the right story and the right haunting because, you know, that requires a lot of deep diving. Or I'd like to do kind of a like a history of all my favorite hauntings I've ever heard about and deep dive historical cases and kind of do it in a similar format. Just takes a lot of work. So, you know, hopefully I'll get to do that someday. It would be fun.
Great things to look forward to. Lindsay, where can everybody listen to the podcast? Anywhere podcasts are able to be listened to?
Yeah, for the most part. Everywhere you listen, you'll find it. You can also go to www.thechillingpodcast.com. Episodes are available there, but usually everybody's listening, you know, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, places like that. And if you want to follow us on social, it's at The Chilling Podcast on Instagram. I post some evidence. I've got some photos and things from the house on there. A lot of funny memes, which I love. And then listener Q&As. I had a lot of people ask questions. So I did a video series where I just answer little questions myself. So if you're looking for some fun, spooky content, come check it out.
And I give a very strong endorsement to this podcast. I do all my listeners to go and listen to this because I guarantee after the first episode, you're going to be hooked and you're not going to want to stop listening until the end. And when it's over, you're going to feel like, I want more.
Well, thank you. That is such a wonderful compliment. And I hope I get to. I would love to do it for forever. I really enjoyed that format. So yeah, breakaway for season two. And, you know, trying to figure out how I can tackle another long, super spooky story for you folks. So we'll see how that how that works out.
Definitely. I'm looking forward to that. Well, Lindsay, I thank you for coming on and telling pieces of your story and giving enough previews for your podcast for people to go and listen to.
Thank you for having me on and chatting with me. And you know what? You know, if you ever have any tips about psychic training or what I could do or your wife has any, send it my way. I'll start working and seeing what happens. I can always report back and say how it's going.
Oh, do we have stories for you? You don't even know. But appreciate you coming on. As always, guys, you can catch our social media at Hidden the Shadows Podcast on Instagram, Hidden the Shaw 6 on Twitter, Hidden the Podcast 2 on TikTok, or links to all of social media and all ways to listen to us at HiddenTheShadowsPodcast.com. And as always, we'll catch your widows in the next one.